This show is sponsored by Midi Health. There are great things that come with age: wisdom, experience, and knowledge, just to name a few. But if you're a woman over 40, it can also bring some less desirable things like hot flashes, insomnia, brain fog, moodiness, and weight gain, all symptoms of menopause and perimenopause. Yes, hormonal transition is a fact of life, but that doesn't mean you have to accept its symptoms as just another part of aging. Midi clinicians are menopause experts, equipped to support you with safe, effective, FDA-approved medications, as well as supplements, lifestyle coaching, and preventative health guidance. You'll come out of the experience feeling heard and with a plan to start feeling better. Midi offers accessible care. All their services are covered by insurance, and they're conveniently accessible through telehealth visits and 24/7 messaging. You deserve to feel great. Book your virtual visit today at joinmidi.com. That's joinmidi.com.
No one's ever going to hear this song. You're not thinking of a kid's movie now.
Yeah, but you know what?
It's think Lightning McQueen now when you hear this song, don't you, damn it?
I do. Admit it. I do, but it's still like I'm good with it. Like, you know what I mean?
Yeah, it's still good.
That's
yeah.
Fair. Like, it's not like it was overplayed, I guess.
It hasn't been ruined. You know, there's been some other singers in my life that I think have ruined certain songs. And
is this me?
And he's inciting that you better not cover it. Otherwise, this will be ruined.
Did you see? I had a brief.
This is why
I had an epiphany last night. Uh-huh, you know?
Go ahead.
No, go ahead. What did you see last night? Did you notice something on social media?
I saw in the middle of the game when we're all sweating this Royals team's game out. Unfortunately, the Royals win and things aren't going well. The offense was struggling still and all that. I saw, because Eric Hosmer is very active on social medias now. He's got his new media company, which is really cool.
He's been following the Royals a lot.
Yeah, he's been on the station a couple times recently as well. I saw you tweeted at him.
I did.
You said, I'm paraphrasing, you said, "Hey, Haas, if the Royals win, will you please sing a song with me?"
Pretty much. I don't think it sounded quite that pathetic. Like I'm Oliver, like I'm asking for more soup. But yeah, it was a similar vibe, sure.
And
then he said, he seemed confused. He sent a gift that seemed confused. I then responded with one of the songs, said, "This is typically the style we do." You know, like it didn't sound like a no. And then his response was, "I do better in a live singing situation. So how about you and I do a song live?"
Okay.
"When the boys are in October." So Eric Hosmer, as far as I'm concerned, has agreed to sing a song with me during the playoffs for the Royals coming up next week. So Haas and I got to get together. We got to work out some times. I got to send him a text.
All right.
But Eric Hosmer sounds like he's agreeing to do a song with me. So now the real question is what song? I was really, really thinking about it last night.
Live changes things, too. I mean, some of your recent work has involved some more editing than normal. This is, more reason for the Royals to make the playoffs. Who knows? We may have some plans in the future anyway to do some stuff next week. So that's the hope, right? The Royals got to get in the playoffs for that all to happen. But okay. All right. It's out there. So he didn't say no. He definitely didn't say
no. If you've got some suggestions for songs that Eric Hosmer and I should sing together, he sounds like he's on board. And I got to figure out, I should ask him, I feel like not knowing whether or not he likes to sing or can sing or any of those things, I feel like I got to choose more of a, you know how you said the last song was better because I'm essentially just yelling.
That helps.
Like talking or yelling or those things. I think I need to maybe be in that genre.
Yeah,
we'll
I don't
see.
Think he's going to be singing upbeat, high-pitched pop song with you. You know, that doesn't seem like...
I don't think so either.
I don't think that's happening.
And I don't want it to just be let's see if he can do the second verse of Fetty Wap 1738.
Yeah, yeah.
So, you know, I think we got to find some middle ground there. We'll work on it.
Does he know that you... Like, when you said sing a song with me, does he know that it's not, just singing a cool, popular song, that it's, an original or
I don't
a cover?
Know. Well, look, we didn't get into the nitty-gritty there, but... We'll figure it out. I'll write the lyrics for him. I'll save him a lot of the trouble. All he has to do is perform.
Okay. 913-586-7965. We'll get back to that, I'm sure, once we know the Royals are actually in the postseason. We will get back to the Royals in about 8 minutes or so. I want to talk about reaction that I saw a lot recently, especially during the losing streak, but even last night a little bit. We'll do that on the Royals front. But we asked Ross Tucker about Travis Kelce. And he mentioned the kind of champagne problems right now. Like, we're worrying about Travis Kelce. Like, it's going to be fine. You're 3-0, et cetera. But it's a fair conversation to recognize the production hasn't been there. I think there's a different level.
For less than 400 yards. That's
there's a different level of concern for everybody. Some people think, oh my gosh, this is who he is now. Other people will tell you he's still going to have 1,200 yards and relax. I think there's probably, like most things, something in the middle here where it's like, okay, the production's not there. This is not normal, but also acknowledging that I don't think he had to, what you were just saying, he's not going to just have 300 yards at the end of the year. Now, he for the first time really addressed this, because even in times we've been in the locker room after games, he hasn't really discussed the lack of production. He's not as available, frankly, as much as he used to be, just full disclosure, in the locker room and stuff like that, and that's fine. But he was on his podcast. It's another reason why I think he's like, you know what, I'll just do this podcast thing. Instead, he was talking about not getting caught up in stats.
Fans are asking what's going on with the Chiefs offense. Pat and Coach Reed were asked about Big Yeti. We're calling plays for Travis, and it's like two or three people are going to him. People are really emphasizing trying to take him away.
It's football, baby. Come on now. Like, I'm not getting caught up in getting the targets and all that. I just want to have a successful offense. And I think Pat's doing a great job of finding the open guy and making the right decisions right now. It's a new offense, new players, new pieces, and we're just finding how to have success throughout the season. I've had a lot of catches in this league, man. I'm not worried about the catches and the yards and all of that. I have the most fun when I get the ball thrown my way. I mean, who doesn't? It has everything to do with execution, just making sure that we're doing whatever we can to win these football games, man. That's always going to be the goal.
It's going to go your way. It's going to go your way, especially if you freaking keep being the guy you've always been. There ain't nobody that I've ever played sports with and nobody that anybody's ever been on a team with that has loved being out there with Trav more. It's frustrating for me to watch and have to listen to, but I can't wait.
I appreciate it, brother.
I just can't wait. I can't wait for it to turn.
And if it doesn't, as long as we're winning football games, we good to go, baby.
First, I love Jason supporting him. He's like, it's hard to watch, man. I feel bad. I know that you're good for it. But you're Travis is like, it's football. Sometimes you don't get the ball thrown your way, and mostly it's fine. But also, he gave you the answer you want from an athlete, which is, and if it doesn't, if we're winning, I'm good. You won't hear Travis complain about his production unless it also means they're losing. If Travis is getting two catches for 14 yards and they're losing, well, then he is probably going to have something to say that's about it. Throwing him the damn ball. But he doesn't have to right now. They're 3-0.
And I think that's how we should kind of view it as well, though. Like, unless you're fantasy football guy and you're upset because you drafted him and you're not getting production and whatever, that's the name of the game, that happens, then if the team is winning and Rashee Rice is still cooking the way he is, then okay, it's part of the game script. Like that is what the defense essentially is allowing. They're fine. But you're right. I think when it becomes more concerning, or if there's a game, maybe it's Sunday, maybe it's 3 weeks from now, I don't know. If the opponent is shutting down Rashee Rice, or it's just a bad game for him, and Travis still can't get going, then when they act like they need him to win said game,
then it's different.
Then it becomes a problem. And I know we're trying to avoid it becoming a problem. Like, hey, let's get everybody up to speed and let's get this thing rolling. Sure, that's an ideal scenario. But I think that's very true. Like that, you know what? They're winning and he hasn't had to put up the big numbers. So it's a much different vibe than if you're in Jacksonville where you're 0-3 and you're, you know, or any other market, right? Cincinnati, like whatever, right? You know, I was trying to avoid Cincy today. Well, I wanted Drew and I to get along today, you know?
Yeah, you guys had your different fight over college instead. Yeah. So, you got to let the Cincinnati thing go.
Well, since more information's come out, I think now that my opinion has changed.
I mean, it's the same. I don't know if more information's come out. It's just like different sides of it. Like, I think the same thing's happened. The college side has said that he's screwing them over, and he's saying that they're screwing him over. I don't know if that's new information. They're both saying the same thing that was being reported this morning.
There's a batch of five reports that are saying they effed him. He was promised money. There's three other reporters saying, no, he never was promised anything. He wants more money.
Or that it was verbally agreed upon.
I have no idea who
he screwed himself. Yeah. Or
verbally only protects maybe like, hey, he probably can't sue them to get his money. It doesn't change the fact that if he was promised, verbal or not, that he could still leave. We're not going back down this road, though.
How much you bet with Travis Kelce that the very first pass of the game goes to him this week?
What's that?
The very first pass of the game. How much you want to bet that the very first pass of the game goes to Travis Kelce?
That's kind of what I thought with the Atlanta game.
Travis Kelce.
To start the second half, that's exactly what they did.
And they'll do it again this week.
Yeah, to start that second half, after everybody was talking about that at halftime and the broadcast crew was and everything, right away it was a true concerted effort. And then it was kind of it. I still put a lot of this on Mahomes, too. I know everybody's focusing on Kelce.
He's not playing well.
We said yesterday, the footwork's off. We had Nate Taylor in studio. Some of Travis Kelce's lack of production is also on Patrick Mahomes. His production is down, therefore, it's affecting everybody. The only guy that's really eating out there is Rashee Rice. And that's great for him.
And I just told you, there's three or four plays in that game where Travis Kelce is taking people away from Rashee Rice. Go back and watch the catches. Like, the routes are designed that way. It's not that Rice is doing anything wrong or Kelsey's doing anything wrong. They're just doing it that way.
Coming up in about 30 minutes, we're expected to hear from Andy Reid and Patrick Mahomes right here on your home for the Chiefs, 96.5 The Fan. Up next, we get back to the Royals. One thing that seems to be happening more and more, at least the conversation around Matt Quatrero, even in a win last night, I want to address.
This show is sponsored by Midi Health. There are great things that come with age, wisdom, experience, and knowledge, just to name a few. But if you're a woman over 40, it can also bring some less desirable things like hot flashes, insomnia, brain fog, moodiness, and weight gain, all symptoms of menopause and perimenopause. Yes, hormonal transition is a fact of life, but that doesn't mean you have to accept its symptoms as just another part of aging. Midi clinicians are menopause experts, equipped to support you with safe, effective, FDA-approved medications, as well as supplements, lifestyle coaching, and preventative health guidance. You'll come out of the experience feeling heard and with a plan to start feeling better. Midi offers accessible care. All their services are covered by insurance, and they're conveniently accessible through telehealth visits and 24/7 messaging. You deserve to feel great. Book your virtual visit today at joinmidi.com. That's join, M-I-D-I. com.
That's that next. Back here on Cody and Gold, coming up in 25 minutes or so, expected to hear from Andy Reid and Patrick Mahomes, as well as newly activated to the 53-man, Kareem Hunt. Looks like he's going to play on Sunday. Find out just how much, kind of what Andy has to say about that.
Yeah,
what's
that
split going to look like? It is kind of interesting because we know the three running backs that will be active already. It's going to be Carson Steele, P. Ryan, and now Kareem Hunt, as Keonta Ingram was cut, probably ends up back on the practice squad. Clyde is not eligible to come back. So we know who the three backs are, but what about
what's
how they're
going to
break it down? And we talked about that a little bit yesterday. Just, you know, you and I both think that perhaps the six carries essentially that P. Ryan got, those might go to Kareem Hunt. Carson Steele still going to be the guy that gets the bulk of the carries. And then maybe Andy rolls with the hot hand if, let's say, Kareem Hunt is really effective. I don't know if that's going to happen on Sunday against the Chargers, but we're going to hear from Reid, Mahomes, and Kareem Hunt coming up in just a little bit on 96.5 The Fan. But let's get back to the Royals. We started the show today already discussing, hey, a win's a win. Whew. Take it. Doesn't matter how it's done, especially when there's now only five games to go and they're in much better position. Not great, much better, though, than where they were at 24 hours ago after their win and the results from the Twins losing and the Mariners losing. But it's been interesting to see, understandably during a losing streak, but even last night in a win, how people are viewing Matt Quatrero, who, by the way, joined Bob and Dusty this morning. You can catch that interview up on 96.5thefan.com.
Yeah, you knew the website. Smart.
I had to hesitate for a split second.
Yeah, but you got it. Closer than me. I'm actually kind of stunned, so I'd love some calls. 913-586-7965. Because I feel like my best chance to get it is to actually hear from people. So 913-586-7965. I am surprised by the amount of negativity that surrounds Q. Because I'm not really sure what else you want from him. I understood it when it happened with Ned, right? Happened with Ned. He's playing Esky, hitting leadoff. He's doing all these things. They're losing. They got a losing record before the All-Star break. But the second Ned started winning, happy good times, man.
Sure,
everyone loves Ned. Oh, he loves the bees and the moon. We, you know, can't get enough of old Ned Yost, right? They stop questioning the decisions. It makes sense that he's putting Moose in the lineup. Look at Esky hitting a leadoff. Home run inside the park to get the World Series, like, can do no wrong, right? And so it eventually shifted with Ned Yost. It has not, at least on social media and on the text line, it has not shifted with Q. He took a team from 56 wins to actively, at least as of today, in the postseason. So what is it about Q you don't like or you don't trust? Or if it's the other end, why? Because if it's about the lineup, no offense, but I don't think the difference between should he play DeJong or should he play Garrett Hampson is really, I mean, okay.
Right.
Or so, which bullpen arms he should be using. He only has a handful he trusts, maybe less.
The lineup stuff is gotten a little crazy, just to your point there, lastly, which is at some point, knowing the injuries that exist, the big one, Vinny Pasquantino, and the options that you have, at some point you're like, hey, Adam Frazier, Paul DeJong, Garrett Hampson. Like, those are the options that he has to choose from. And I'm not trying to take shots at those guys, but like, that's the reality. We know recently nobody's been hitting, but still, like, it's not like they're leaving. It's not like Vinny Pasquantino's on the bench and healthy, and they're just not putting him in the lineup. I mean, the lineup stuff is frustrating in terms of the criticism. Nobody's saying he's a perfect manager. I'm sure he would admit that as well. Nobody's saying that there aren't mistakes made, decisions, buttons you push that don't pan out. Last night, for example, puts in Blanco early on in the game, decides to steal second. That works. That steals, attempts to steal at third. It doesn't work out. I get the reasoning behind it. They were struggling to get a single run, so you had to capitalize. Now, it backfired because Blanco gets thrown out of third, but like, I don't view that as a terrible managerial decision. You know what I mean?
No. Or even like the pinch hitting, like last night, they were just trying to buy a run with Blanco, right? Doing whatever they could to do it. Yeah. He has limited options. Overall, how could you not think Q is doing a really good job? He's doing what you asked a manager to do for a year. Care about analytics versus just Mike Matheny, who I did not like as a manager. I've made that very clear on this show. Who's just doing it off of vibes who's a baseball dude. Screw that. That was not the method I wanted. I wanted this version of a manager.
Yeah.
And they also, it's baseball. Can we also admit that baseball managers don't matter the way Andy Reid matters? And instead, their impact on the game is less than just Adam Frazier getting a hit or somebody else in the field coming through. I don't know. I don't get it. I don't get the negativity around Q, which is why I opened it up. 913-586-7965 on the text line. If you want to call in, that's fine. Because I'm curious what I'm missing.
Yeah, we'll get to a call in a second. I think, one, you're mentioning Ned Yost at one point there and why people viewed him differently. You're like, hey, it hasn't happened yet. Let's remember, Ned Yost ultimately, it didn't happen until they won that wild card. During that wild card game, people were like, oh, he's getting fired tomorrow. Like, let's remember that. During that wild card game, it took until they really got to the ALCS where people were like, oh, you know what? Maybe he's a great manager now. So
the Dunce versus the Chessmaster.
So the switch doesn't happen overnight just because you even make the postseason. I do think at times the criticism has been unfair. That's part of the job, though. I think Q would tell you that as well. But some of the individual game by game criticism stuff is still, I think, a small minority of people, a vocal minority of people. I had somebody on Twitter last night saying the Royals' lack of runs, quote, is solely on Matt Quatrera. Like, okay, come on. Like, solely?
Because he's been hitting righties versus righties and lefties versus lefties. The math supports it.
When you have a 7-game losing streak like they had, it sounds cliche, but like, Q plays a role in that. The players play a huge, I would say, 80% of that, quite honestly.
Q's like 10%.
And then you could just say, hey, front office, whatever.
Talent's available.
Yeah, but sometimes we do overvalue the manager's role, good or bad, on the positive end or on the negative end. But let's go out to the phone. You wanted to as well. I'm with you. 913-586-7965. We've got Taylor and KC Mo. Hey, what's going on, Taylor? You're on Cody and Gold.
Hey, what's going on, guys? How you doing this morning?
Good, man.
Hey, I think you guys hit it right on the head. I mean, everything's good when somebody's winning, but then as soon as they start doing bad, I'll get him out. I think he's doing fine. I mean, I think if anything, we just need to get back to what brought us success in 14-15. Maybe just get back to a little bit of small ball, moving guys around the bases, but guys got to get on the bases to do that. So I think he's doing good, and, I don't think we need to be riding him out of town on a pole or anything like that. So
Maybe it's just a social media thing or a text line thing where people, let's be honest with you, text line, tend to be a bit more negative. Not a lot of good times and vibes coming from the text line when you can be not anonymous, but you can just send it in rather than have to speak the words into existence.
That's just like life in general. I don't care what the topic is. We're talking sports or anything else, it's very easy for, social media, whatever, to
Steve 57423 to be like, get rid of Q rather than, if you talk to him into his face.
Yeah, there was somebody last, it's funny you brought, someone else was like, BX7899247. It was something like crazy.
You got a lot of numbers in your handle.
I'll be honest, I'm not responding when it's that long of, you got to have at least somewhat of appears to maybe be an actual account or whatever, 913-586-7965. Let's go out to Doug in Blue Springs. What's going on, Doug?
Hey, how are you guys doing?
Good.
It's tough when they're losing, but I think for me anyways, it's the way that they're losing. When you know that they're having a struggle in situational hitting, the batting average with runners in scoring position is terrible. They're leaving, you know.
Sure.
When they do get guys on base, they're leaving them. And so it's like there hasn't been any strategy to try to change it up. You've got several guys on the team that, you know, Isbell, Massey, Hampson, Witt, even Melendez and Renfro, who at any time in situational hitting could play small ball, lay down a bunt, something to move runners over when there's, you know, one out or less and get them in scoring position or put them across. And it's just like, nope, that's not their role. We're just going to swing away and swing away and swing away. And it's like that Yankees game that they lost in extra innings. You know, they played small ball and they got a run on in the 10th. In the 11th, nope, we're just swinging away. They don't even move the runner, and then they lose. And so it's like, you know, the frustration of a lack of strategy, and when you're not getting on base, when you're not hitting, you know, Bobby Witt was in a big slump for a long time. He's one of the fastest guys in baseball. You never see him lay a bunt down. And, you know, last week he had two swinging bunts. You know, he swung, ball barely went anywhere, and what happened? He got on base. It's like there's weapons that they could use that aren't being used to try and break out of the slump. And that is frustrating when, you know you have a lot of speed all up and down the lineup.
So and we appreciate the call, but when you so the bunting thing is interesting because the Royals do have speed and they were desperately over the last week, I'll tell you, they're doing way more of that bunting than you thought before. And I hate it. You know, again, this goes back to the analytical part. Someone said, hey, why not last night? Part of their issue with Q last night was why didn't they have Tommy Pham bunt the guy over to third?
Yeah, that was the big moment.
Every single stat in baseball, just so you know, supports that you are more likely statistically to get that runner home to score a run by hitting with three outs and letting each person take a swing than bunting one over and only having two outs to get a run. I'm telling you, every single metric suggests you are more likely to score the run. And I understand, case by case, I want people to not just strictly go, because I think Dan Campbell or Shanahan or some of these other coaches who've gotten themselves in trouble in the NFL end, where they only care about the math and they're not reading the energy of the room, can be bad too. But for the most part, I think Q's kind of mix and match.
Yeah, and I'll be honest, I don't ever want to see Bobby Witt Jr. bunt.
Oh, yeah, him?
So,
never.
You know, that's a specific example, but I think the caller mentioned that. Bobby Witt Jr. should not.
Not unless somebody's just giving him a free base.
And look, last night we know the issue. I mean, the Tommy Pham example, I figured someone would bring that up. I'm glad you did.
Yeah.
Because, oh man, that crossed my mind too last night. This might be a spot. The one thing, and I know it's going back to our social media comment, that's not a reasonable, a reason well thought out place typically. And sometimes I think if you actually sit back and listen to the reason why Q might do something, you're like, you know what? I think that makes sense. For me, it gets frustrating if there's ever a manager or a coach where it's they don't have a legit reason behind it that makes sense. If the reason behind it doesn't make any sense, then you have a problem. Most of the time, not all the time, there's a reason why a certain decision was made. And you're like, you know what? Okay. That I can see. You know what? It just did not work out. Also, the bunting thing, I mean, last night they had the bases loaded in the first and the third inning, and they weren't trying to bunt, obviously. You can't. I guess you can, but you're not.
I wouldn't recommend a squeeze play in the first inning of a 0-0 game.
Yuli hit the ball, about as hard as you can. Yeah. To not get a base hit out of it. So, I get it. I appreciate the conversation. This is a much easier conversation to have after a win yesterday, that is for sure, than it would have been if they had lost 8 in a row, because people wouldn't want to hear it. They'd be like, just wouldn't want to hear it, period. We could actually have a little bit of a conversation because this team sacked out of it. Yeah.
I'm not even being critical. I'm actually curious.
913-586-7965. Let's get one final call in, and then coming up in about 15 minutes, we're expected to hear from Andy Reid and Patrick Mahomes. Looks like we've got a bouncer from Lawrence. What's going on?
Hey, yeah, about the manager Cotaro, the Royals had trouble earlier in the season, I thought with some of his decision making, but he's evolved. I think he's grown some. They run into a situation with their lineup, but I think it goes back to pitching. Everybody's real high on the pitching, but the Royals pitching staff leads the major leagues in strikeouts. And these guys throwing hard, getting lots of strikeouts, they fade. They begin to fade in the fifth and sixth inning. And they're in there a little too long. They give up the runs there at the end. And I think that, I don't know what you do about that because he's got strikeout pitchers. If they were more finesse, they could probably go longer into the game.
Bouncer, real quick. So I hear the point, but also when you the two of the pitchers were all-stars this year, but the other part would be we all acknowledge the bullpen's had issues, right? And so you are at some times going to have to stretch out your stars. But, I mean, starting pitching is the least of their concerns.
Well, no, but if you go back to the Astros game that started the first seven-game losing streak, I believe it was Reagans had thrown eight straight strikeouts.
I think that's right, yeah.
I was talking to my brother on the phone at the end of the third inning. I said, he's going to fade in the fifth inning. He's going to start losing a little velocity, and the Houston Astros are probably the best at picking up the pitcher. They use AI technology in there. I don't think it's allowed to do that, to scan pitchers while they're working against you, but they do this. They've been using this technology. They were the first teams on it, and they've got this down to a craft, and then they blasted on him, and he ends up giving up seven runs, I think, before they finally yanked him. But
I appreciate it.
You go to Brady Singer,
yeah,
who I think is he's getting a lot of strikeouts, and he fades. Okay. I think he was in.
I appreciate the call.
Long.
No, I hear you. I Bouncer. I appreciate the call. That's Bouncer in Lawrence listening to us here.
I'm confused by so first off, saying you want your pitchers to strike less people out is the same thing to me as the people who are arguing home runs are rally killers or whatever. I'll take as many strikeouts as the pitcher can get. That's a guaranteed out in which nobody on the base paths can score.
I
understand his issue with
the Astros game points out. I get it, but also that's one of 162 or not even 162 yet. We're about to be at 162, and overall the starting pitch. I thought we. It sounds like maybe he disagreed with me. And that's fine. I thought we agreed that the starting pitching is the.
That's
only
not the
reason
problem.
That they are in the position.
It's the only reason
in.
They won last night. It's the only reason they're in the playoff. Not the only reason. It's the biggest reason, I guess, is how I'd say it.
If there's been a handful of games this year where people have been critical that they left a starter out too long, but the pushback and the counter, I guess, to that is we also all agree, right? I think, that the bullpen has been a problem. So if we think they're leaving guys out too long, but we also think the bullpen's not good enough, something has to give, right?
This goes to the same thing in the lineup. And yeah, I'll just tell you right now, if you forced me, this is maybe why I'm less critical on Q Gold, is that if you and I were put in the same spot, they let me become the manager of the Kansas City Royals tomorrow. I'm not qualified for it, but they just decide, sure, Cody, go ahead. You're the manager of the Royals. If you were going to force me between the decision that is maybe leave your starter in too long or trust the bullpen for a full additional inning. Hello, starter. Every time. Almost 100% of the time. Now, I'll say there are always little moments in which you and I can watch a pitcher and be like, look, I know you think you don't want to trust the bullpen for that extra out, but he doesn't have it.
Yeah.
And going that extra inning is not going to get you there. You still have to make incremental judgment calls, and it's not just the rule 100% of the time, but most of the time, if it's like, well, Reagan looks like he's laboring a little bit in the fifth. Okay. If it's that or Chris Stratton, Reagan struggle a little bit or whatever, right? It doesn't really matter if it's Stratton.
But look at this year's team. I mean, it was very evident 2 months into the season what their biggest strength, heck, a month into the season, what their biggest strength was and what their weakness was. And so with that, you push some guys an extra inning. But even with that said, like, for 90% of this year, Reagans, Lugo, and Waka, and at most of the time, Singer, too. But those three in particular, Reagans, Lugo, and Waka, have been as good as anybody in baseball. I mean, so that's the text line is wondering, and I didn't have time to. We needed to move on from the caller. They want to know if Bouncer from Lawrence is actually a bouncer. Do you think he actually is
or
a bouncer?
Or was a bouncer in a previous life?
We think?
I probably should have asked. But
he said Lawrence, which had me thinking of the outhouse.
Bouncers in Lawrence.
I was thinking of the outhouse right away.
I'll be honest. I had to do a double take. He said bouncer from Lawrence.
There's got
to
be a good backstory.
Can you tell me your name again?
I bet he's a bouncer.
He said it's his nickname. So
Okay.
Because he used to get in fights.
Or he used to be a
bouncer. A lot of choices.
Maybe.
Someone on the 951 says, hey, do you guys agree they should back up the money truck for Vinny? I made this very clear. I hope every player gets paid. But I like Vinny as a person. So, yes, I hope they pay him a bunch of money
this offseason. During this stretch, also, in a way, his value is even more evident than ever before.
He had a near 100 RBI season. He didn't get injured in the way where he was, like, hurt the year before. Freak accident on a baseball diamond. He's their second best hitter behind Bobby Wood Jr. Yeah, I'd probably pay Vinny Pasquantino. And I also think, just as a side note, he got a lot better first base this year. So
So my thing, I'd pay Vinny. After last season, I think you asked me the question, like, hey, should they take care of the deal this offseason? My hesitation was like, I want to see him make it through a full season. He basically did. This injury was a fluke injury. Where, you know, we all know this situation, Urseg throw, and he has his arm and he breaks his thumb on a play against the Houston Astros. But my guess is if there's anybody that gets a deal done next, my guess is it's him. But that's more of an offseason conversation.
Could be Reagans, could be Singer, could be some of the pitchers.
Reagans, but I don't know if they need, like, I don't know if that's something you need to get done this offseason or not.
So. You don't have to. You technically have time on.
Technically, you don't have to get Vinny's contract done this offseason either.
Yeah.
I mean, that applies to all these guys, if we're being honest.
Like Singer, they actually technically don't have to extend any of those players. Yeah. They're all on their roster for next year. But some of them are in the final year of their deal and arbitration eligible, so it's kind of like put up or shut up time on that end, so we'll see.
We'll have all offseason to talk about that. That is for sure. All right, coming up next, guys, we get to the Chiefs Red Half Hour. We're going to hear from Andy Reid, Patrick Mahomes, and now potentially somebody that's going to get some carries, that is Kareem Hunt. He's going to speak to the media. Cody, what, the first time since 2018 in Kansas City?
Probably just like a regular season game. It's not like he talked to the media here in Kansas City after he was
cut. I think this will be the first time we hear from Kareem Hunt in Kansas City since 2018. That's coming up next on 96.5.
This show is sponsored by Midi Health. There are great things that come with age, wisdom, experience, and knowledge, just to name a few. But if you're a woman over 40, it can also bring some less desirable things like hot flashes, insomnia, brain fog, moodiness, and weight gain, all symptoms of menopause and perimenopause. Yes, hormonal transition is a fact of life, but that doesn't mean you have to accept its symptoms as just another part of aging. Midi clinicians are menopause experts, equipped to support you with safe, effective, FDA-approved medications, as well as supplements, lifestyle coaching, and preventative health guidance. You'll come out of the experience feeling heard and with a plan to start feeling better. Midi offers accessible care. All their services are covered by insurance, and they're conveniently accessible through telehealth visits and 24/7 messaging. You deserve to feel great. Book your virtual visit today at joinmidi.com. That's join, M-I-D-I. .com.
Fan.
Welcome in to the Chiefs Red Half Hour. Every day at 11:30 with Cody and Gold on your new home for Chiefs football. 96.5. The Fan.
All right, in just a couple minutes, we're going to hear from Andy Reid, Patrick Mahomes, and Kareem Hunt. As soon as they are at the podium out at Arrowhead, we will head out there right here on your home for the Chiefs. 96.5. The Fan.
I keep seeing depressing stats. Like, we were just talking, like, baseball analytics, and I keep seeing stats like, efficiency on passes 5 to 15 yards in the NFL. Efficiency in deep passing over 20 yards. Every single stat has the Chiefs near the bottom again. And I'll be honest, after dealing with that for 365 days last year, I was like, whoo, to be free. In August 1st, like, to be free of this. To not know this pain of poor, slow-moving offense. Honestly, part of it is, I'll just be honest, I'm not ready to settle into something that I got asked, which is the offense going to be the same version in the sense that is every drive? Last week, they had a 17-play drive, a 13-play drive, two 11-play drives. They had one fast score, the touchdown to, who am I thinking of? The Juju one was pretty quick.
Yeah.
But for the most part, long drives. Methodical.
That's what was given
to them.
Take
your time. Right? And it is what was given to them.
That's what the defense is given. You got, you know, it's a little bit of both. Like, you got to be patient. Yeah. It doesn't mean that Mahomes has not missed some opportunities down the field because he's so used to checking down. But also, the Falcons are playing zone defense, and they're going to let you just keep, you know, dinking and dunking a little bit.
I think specifically with that matchup, it just makes a lot of sense. But with the, like, the Chargers, right? They're going to be without Derwin James. Are you sure you can't get the ball to the tight end 15 yards down the field? You sure Travis Kelce shouldn't exist? in this matchup, they're down so many players, pass rushers. Shouldn't you have time to get the ball down the field? But when they're winning, I don't feel like Andy feels the pressure to, like, force the action yet. I don't think it's all just like, I'm saving it all for February or, you know, January. But I do think there's a point of, like, Andy doesn't feel pressed to get the ball down the field. But it is hard to see them once again have no efficiency in a deep passing game situation.
Look, I love seeing a 70-yard touchdown as much as anybody. But
it is fun.
When defenses are playing, you know, there's a little bit of both. But at the same time, like, we're acting like a 12-play, 70-yard touchdown drive is a bad thing. Like, it's not.
No, it also means you moved the ball. Like, it also means you were successful. Two ended in a field goal, one ended in a turnover. Well, that's the problem with 12 plays.
Well, the problem that goes back to the red zone stuff, though, right? Like, how do you fix that? You got to be better in the red zone. The argument for the big play is, well, you avoid the red zone because you're just going to have a big play. Yeah, I'm sure every team would prefer, Cody, they could run three plays and have a touchdown. That'd be great. That's just not the reality. I know we saw them do it in the past. I still think that can happen at some point, but I think sometimes we also have made it such a negative to go out and have a long touchdown drive. Like, it's this terrible thing. It's not a bad thing if they were better in the red zone. They're just not good in the red zone. The issue last year was they were also having all these penalties that were, hey, we're going to make you go on a long drive.
You're going to have to combat yourself.
Yeah. So if they're having a long drive like they did against Atlanta and they're not having bad false start and holding penalties, then it's fine. Last year, they were having long drives. Teams said, hey, beat us down the field for 12 plays. We think we're going to stop you or you're going to make a mistake. It's three games in, they haven't made as many mistakes. Now, the turnover is a whole different conversation, but from a penalty perspective offensively, we haven't seen that. I'll let you look that up. But the whole league is not getting big play after big play. You're correct in saying,
but there are some still.
You are correct in saying they're 26th or whatever, so they're clearly behind other teams. But it's not as if the entire league is all of a sudden, you know, hitting big play after big play, and the Chiefs are left in the dark here.
But even amongst teams not hitting the big play, that was the point, where you said, like, but they're still 26th, you know? So to a point where you're like, ugh. I looked it up. They are 13th low, or I guess they're, I don't know, 17th place in penalty yards right now in the NFL.
Okay.
So they're about league average. Yeah. If you're curious, they're about league average amongst teams of penalty yards against them, which means, a number you could sacrifice because, as you and I both know, this team has regularly rated far, 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 far worse in that category pretty regularly. I'm not here to tell you that, like, this is the only way to live. And if they don't get the deep pass, they're 3-0. Like, but I don't think that it's unfair to be like, still? You still aren't efficient deep?
I hear you.
Like, what was the point of getting in Worthy? Now, I'll point out, I think this is the other one.
Hollywood Brown's not there.
Yes. And for the people who are like, and because this is another one of those, like, if we're sitting in the bar, Gold, and you and I are in the friend group, you know, we get asked about Worthy. I'll answer that in a little bit.
All right, let's go out to Arrowhead and hear from Andy Reid right here on 96.5 The Fan.
We'll start on that today. So, with that time, cheers.
Andy, decision to bring Kareem Hunt up. You know, what have you seen of him, you know, throughout this last time we talked to you that made you say he's ready for
him? Yeah, so I thought he had a good week of practice last week. He took the majority of the scout team reps. And looks like he's in pretty good shape. So now the next step is just getting him in the game. So he'll rotate in, and we'll see how he does.
Andy, how do you see that workload getting split up between the
two? I don't know, Adam. We'll just see how things go. I'll play it by ear with him. We've got three good running backs, and we just get him back into the swing of things, see how it rolls.
Andy, last week, did you get much of a chance to get a sense of how up to date he can be with what you're doing? I know you're a scout team a lot, so I don't know.
Yeah, I feel like his retention was pretty good. So, this week will help too, just going through it. But he's got a pretty good feel on what we're doing.
So. Andy, what do you like just about the running game? Has worked so far the first 3 weeks?
Yeah, I think. First of all, compliments to Heck and the offensive line and the players. I mean, they've done a great job with that, and we've had positive yards, and that's it's a nice addition to everything. In this league, you got to be able to mix things in there, and that gives you a good power run game and still being able to throw the ball.
I know you want to have a
running game anyway, but just with the way the teams have defended you over the past few years, how vital is that to just to be able to run when you see the boxes that you're seeing?
Yeah, no, that's important. It's important. You always try to keep defenses honest, and they're doing the same thing back to you. So it's a little bit of a cat and mouse game on the number of people in the box, but it's been productive. So we've had good positive yards from it.
Coach, in your game prep, what gives you optimism that Travis, by his standards, will be a level of production maybe starting on Sunday?
Yeah, so I know people are saying that he's old or whatever, has distractions and all this, and the defenses don't think that. And so we have another receiver that plays opposite him that has a lot of yards and catches. And that's how this thing goes. So Trav is fine. He just keeps being Trav. He works his tail off, and he hasn't lost a step and all those things. He's not distracted. That's not the case. People are making sure they have him taken care of by some of these defenses.
He seems to be one of the kind of guys who, listen, he wants targets, he wants to develop, but it doesn't really bother him if he knows what there's double teams and other things are open. How nice is that to have someone who's not selfish in that way? Yeah.
No, he literally knows. I mean, he does know that. And he collects people. And then you have the checkdowns that we had last week. These big gains off the check. Or Noah standing in the middle of the field by himself. Four, being able to get one-on-one situations. That's a tribute. And Trav knows it. I mean, he literally said, he came off the field and goes, man, just keep dialing him up and let him do that. So.
Any characteristics, you haven't coached against Jim Harbaugh in a while. You just got a few games of him back here in the National Football League. Any same characteristics as before, the way you remember him when he was coaching at San Francisco?
Yeah, first of all, he's a phenomenal football coach, and he's proven that at every level. So, and that'll be no different here with the Chargers, and it's a physical football team. When you play them, you know that. And on both sides of the ball, special teams, they're going to be sound. They're going to be able to, for everything that's said, they're going to be able to throw the ball as well as they run the ball. So you got to be ready for a complete game. Their defenses are, they're going to give you a variety of looks. You got to be on your game when you play their defense. They're one of the top defenses in the NFL right now. So it's a tribute to how they've gone about their business there.
Andy, I know you obviously like Rashi, you drafted him last year, but are there things about his game maybe you didn't fully appreciate until now?
Is
this the player you envisioned when you drafted
him? Yeah. No, I would tell you, Adam, that we felt he was pretty good when he was here. I believe he led the league in rushing the 1 year, and so that's pretty good accomplishment. And things worked out the way they worked out. We're glad to have him back.
No, I'm sorry, Rashi Rice.
Oh, I'm sorry, Rashi. I'm sorry. Yeah, that's right. Kareem. Yeah, stuck on Kareem. I know he's coming. I know he's coming in here after me. So Rashi, yes, he's as good as we were hoping he would be. The thing you don't know, Adam, when you get into this is the work ethic, and he works his tail off. His willingness to get with Pat and to listen, let's work in this area, to get with Kels and drain Kels of some of his knowledge. And he's very receptive to all that.
Andy, just one other thing about the running game. Obviously, you had some faith in Carson, but to see him do what he did last week, how reassured are you going forward that, okay, that's more established than perhaps you would have thought?
Yeah, listen, I thought he did a nice job for his first game. I thought he did a real nice job. And he's got to fix a couple things on protection, but he'll take care of that. The run game, he was hitting the right holes and working the daylight. He was finishing runs, and he corrected the trying to elbow guys going through with his carry hand, and cleaned that up from the week before. So, but he gives you an honest down, and he's gonna run hard. He's a big kid, but he's gonna come at you.
Coach, with the last three, but Steve, Nate, and then Sam. What's Steve?
Coach, with as many close games as like these down to the wire games you've had early on in the season, do you find that to be tougher on your guys as opposed to, you know, later in the season, or does it matter?
Yeah, I think the guys expect to come into these things playing four quarters. I mean, when you play good teams, you've got to come in that with that mindset. I think we're all seeing the parity in this league is ridiculous. So, I mean, everybody on any given Sunday, Monday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, whenever we play, potential winner. And that's what the league was striving for, and you're seeing it. And so we expect to get the best every Sunday, yeah, or every game day.
Andy, when you watch your defense, how much are you noticing that other teams are trying to get their tight ends involved, considering how good you guys have been generating pressure and obviously being at the corner position? Just is there something that you've sort of seen there about tight ends?
Yeah, that's observant, because that really the tight end's kind of your quarterback's best friend. Those inside guys that play inside the hash number area, those are real quarterback-friendly guys. So the thing the NFL has right now are some really good tight ends that just aren't blockers, but they can get out and match up with the safeties in this league and nickels. So, our safeties work on that like crazy. Our nickels work on that like crazy. And those are big bodies that you got to try to leverage. They're normally bigger than what you are on the back end there. So you got to really be disciplined with it.
Sam?
Patrick mentioned that his fundamentals he thought were off. What's just the process this week of fine-tuning that?
Yeah, so he's very hard on himself about that. And so we just go back and work your basic fundamentals, techniques, and get into a rhythm. So during the game and work on it in practice. But he's I don't ever worry about him working on those things. So he'll be fine.
Okay, thanks, Coach.
You're listening to Andy Reid and Patrick Mahomes' press conference here on KFNZ-FM and AM HD1 and HD2 in Kansas City on 96.5 The Fan.
We're going to hear from Patrick Mahomes and Kareem Hunt in just a second as well. Out of what Andy had to say there, no new injuries, not quite sure on what the workload will be, at least publicly, not going to say what the workload will be for Kareem Hunt.
But they're definitely going to use him. He said he was in pretty good shape.
Yeah, they're going to mix him in. I mean, he's one of three running backs that will be active on Sunday for the Chiefs. And we just saw it last week. P. Ryan got like six carries. You had Carson Steele get 17 carries. That's not to mention what could happen in the receiving game from Kareem Hunt. And then the most interesting thing to me was still him when he was asked about Travis Kelce. We talked about this earlier in the show. He said, I know, this is what Andrew said, quote, I know people think he's old, he being Travis Kelce, or distracted or whatever. Defenses don't think that, I can tell you. Based on how they're playing him, they don't think he's old and washed up.
They're not acting like he can't play anymore. No, they're still, until teams, here's the thing. Until teams start switching and saying, we're going to stop Rashee Rice instead, it'll probably be a little harder for Travis Kelce.
All right, let's hear from Patrick Mahomes here on 96.5 The Fan.
Everything. Over the course of these last couple of weeks, you know, what have you assessed in your performance that you feel like you need to work on to get better with, and how do you start that process now?
I think the first week there was good things. I thought I was pretty on time and in rhythm. Then last week, I felt like I started off all right, and then kind of got worse as the game went on, and then obviously this last week, I feel like especially in the first half, I was a little out of rhythm, not making throws that I usually make, and got a little bit better in the second half. But now all you can do is go back and practice. I think what I learned, at least from last year, is that it's not always going to pay off like right now, but if you continue to work at it, it will pay off in the long run. And so my hope is that it happens faster than it did last year, but all you can do is get back to work at practice.
You obviously work on that stuff every week. Is there something different you do this week because of how last week went?
I think you just have to really emphasize it. even on like the little throws, sometimes you go through a practice and there's throws that you almost know you're going to complete regardless, and so you kind of just throw them as like completion throws instead of throwing them to the exact accuracy that it needs to be in the game like moment. And so that's going to be what my goal this week is. Even like if you look at that shallow cross, a lot of times in practice you throw it and just right on the guy's body for a completion. I'm going to work on making sure that I'm leading them in case there would be a guy behind them where he needs to catch the ball and run. And so it's just little things like that. I mean, you take them for granted a lot of times when you're going through these early year practices, but I'm going to try to make sure that I stay on top of those things.
Patrick, in your eyes, what has allowed Rashida really have an excellent start at the beginning of the season?
Yeah, I mean, he's just making plays. I think you've seen that he's been more versatile this year. He's able to run more and more routes. And then the way he's able to catch the ball and make stuff happen after the catch, I mean, he's a hard guy to tackle. And so being able to do both those things, I think it helps that the speed out there is kind of helping spread out the field for him. And then there's a lot of attention on Travis. But, I mean, when he's getting those one-on-one matchups, he's winning. And that's all you can ask for a guy. And he seems like he's getting better and better each and every week.
You mentioned the attention on Travis. How is he handling, I guess, some of this early season adversity and maybe not having as much production as he wants?
Yeah, I mean, I think he's handling it amazing, honestly. I want to get him the ball more, whereas he's just like, I just want to win, man. I don't care. Like, I'll run these routes and take guys with me so that other guys can get open. But we understand he's an important part of this offense, and we want to make sure that we're still featuring him. But at the same time, if defenses are going to take away him, I'll feed the ball to other guys and let them make plays. But as the season goes on, if we continue to show that we're going to throw it to Rasheed and we're going to throw it to these other guys, they're going to make plays, teams are going to have to do those one-on-one matchups, and that's when Travis will eat.
Patrick, you've known Travis as long as anybody on the team. Do you think that 25-year-old Travis Kelce would be as accepting about not getting the ball as the 35-year-old Travis Kelce?
In all honesty, I think he's always been this guy. I mean, it's been great for me in my career is that he wants to make an impact in the game, and he wants to make plays. But he wants to win at the end of the day. And so if we're winning, he's good with going out there and playing hard, blocking, do whatever he can to impact the game. And so whenever we're winning games like this, that's everybody, man. You just want to win at the end of the day. And so he's doing a great job, man, of being a leader on the team, playing hard, doing whatever he can to make an impact in the game. And when you do that in this league, usually good things come. And I'm excited for him to go out there and make an impact receiving the ball as well.
I know he was on the practice squad last week, but just what was it like getting to work again with Kareem and now having him elevated to obviously the active roster and the opportunity to play alongside him on Sunday?
Yeah, I mean, it's super exciting. I mean, you can see how much how hungry he is. You can see still the explosiveness. You can see the way he runs the ball between the tackles. I mean, obviously you come in and you haven't had training camp and stuff like that, but he pushed through, man. I mean, he really did. He took that last week as his mini training camp, and he would run, finish every run, and then run back and get it again. And so I thought we did a great job in the run game last week with the running backs that were there. And so it would be nice to just add Kareem in there, let him get going, and kind of have another dimension to that run game.
Patrick, can you give an example?
He's obviously rather win by more comfortable margins, but I wonder if you think there's some cumulative impact in winning the way you guys have, and if it serves you well as the season goes on.
It definitely makes you more comfortable in those situations. I think more than anything for me, I think just executing at a higher level in the fourth quarter would be nice for the offense, especially. I mean, if you look at that second half last week, I mean, those first few drives in the third quarter, we were moving the ball well, moving it right down the field, and then it's like in the fourth quarter, we didn't finish the game. And so that's the next step for us. I mean, if you look back on our history, even in some of these close games, usually when we get the ball in those four-minute modes, we can kind of run the time off. And if we don't, we leave enough time where Spags and them can close the door. And Spags and them have been doing that, but we've been doing it with a little bit, I would say, too much time, with 5 minutes on the clock and 6 minutes on the clock and stuff like that. And so I think offensively we got to help the defense out by running some of that time off the clock or scoring a touchdown to kind of put the game out of reach. And so then the defense can be the defense and be Spags and be creative and get those game-ending interceptions instead of having to really hold it down there at the end in the red zone.
Patrick, you've talked about so much attention on Travis. Can you give an example of the Atlanta game from something you saw on film or in the game?
I remember there's a play. I don't know if Coach talked about it, but we did a play action play, and I was going to throw it to Travis. It was kind of the design play, and I remember the linebacker and both safeties were all three looking at Travis in the middle of the field. And I ended up throwing to Noah for like 13 yards, and Noah literally just ran a sit right over the ball in the middle of everybody, and not one person went with him. And, I mean, that's the impact that he has in the game. I mean, it helps out other guys. I mean, but it's at the same time, if we show that Noah's going to catch that mitt 13 to 15 yards, wherever it is, or if he takes a guy and Rasheed catches the ball and breaks a tackle and gets 15, 20 yards. I mean, teams have to adjust. If they don't, I mean, Rasheed's gonna have 2,000 yards. So it's part of the game. I obviously want to give him the ball and let him make impact the game that way. But the more defenses respect him, other guys get open and other guys make plays.
Can you talk about the job that Wanya did?
I thought he did a great job. I mean, every time his number's gotten called, man, he's stepped up and made and done a great job blocking in the pass and the run game. He's getting better and better. It's a great thing, man, to have guys that can step in and make and play great football when called upon. That's what you want on any football team, and I'm excited for him and his future.
Harold?
Chargers with a new coach. Just what have you seen in their first few games under Coach Harbaugh that make you see it's a little different than maybe years past you've faced it?
Yeah, I mean, you can tell first off just how hard they play. I mean, everybody on that entire team, they believe they play extremely hard every single snap. They fly around to the football. You can tell they understand the scheme and what they're doing. And then, I mean, from everything I've heard from Harbaugh, I haven't got to meet him yet, but I heard he's a great coach, a great person. I mean, Alex Smith talked very highly of him whenever he was here and how organized and how he got the team ready to go every single week. And so, you've seen that at every stop he's been, he's won. And that speaks to him and his mentality and how he coaches his guys.
This is outside the NFL, but you're involved in Texas Tech's NIL, doing some things down there. And we're seeing some NIL things now. The kid from UNLV has said apparently he's not going to play because he didn't get his money. I mean, where are we here? You've seen this from the other side of it in college football. Is this just some growing pains in the system, or what do you think maybe should happen?
Yeah, I don't want to speak crazy a lot on it because I don't know exactly all the details of that situation or really the whole deal. But I think it's NIL is a great thing for players and a lot of families that maybe not got those opportunities to make that money and being able to make it in college. But they're gonna have to figure out a system, just kind of like any other thing. Whenever money's coming in, making sure the contracts are signed, making sure the language is dealt out the right way. And I don't know what that answer is, but there's definitely been some times where money not being paid and stuff like that has affected the play on the field. And these are young kids, man. I mean, I know they're right at the edge of becoming adults, but I don't know if I'd have been ready for that type of thing coming out as an 18-year-old kid. And so hopefully we can find some accountability both ways so that we can make sure that our game that we love in college football stays at a high level.
Sam?
Patrick, I would say Rasheed looks more comfortable in the offense. Can you take us through what you've seen over him over the last year that, you know, he's used that time wisely? Does something come to mind that you've seen in a game that it's just showed up?
Yeah, I think – I mean, at the end of the day, I think he's learned a ton. He doesn't make the same mistakes. I always say that, but it's important because, I mean, it's not always the truth. And he learns from his mistakes, and he doesn't make the same mistake twice. And then I think at the end of the day, what I love about Rasheed more than anything is he plays extremely hard every single snap. And that's something that can't be taught. You have to have this mentality that you want to compete and win. And so it might not always be perfect. I mean, it might not always be the perfect route or the perfect way that he read the covers, but he plays hard so that when you give him the football, he's going to run and get whatever's there. It gives energy, kind of like when Pop runs the football, it gives energy to the whole team because of how hard and competitive he's playing out there.
And how much does that change you as a quarterback, you know, targeting him in the game?
Yeah, I mean, I've obviously built confidence with him that I can go to him in these big moments, third downs, red zone, and he's going to go out there and make the plays happen. And kind of like in the fourth and six when I completed the pass in the Bengals game, is he's gained that trust from me, man, that he's going to go out there and make the play and he's going to compete. It's cool to see, man, because he's still a young player. He still can get better and better. But it's cool to see that all that hard work's paying off.
Okay, thanks, Patrick. Thanks.
All right, that was Patrick Mahomes here on 96.5 The Fan. Reminder, coming up in about 15 minutes, we're going to have Josh Vernier, our Royals insider, join us. We'll get his perspective on the Royals' big win last night and where they sit with five games to go. We're also, in the next minute or so, going to hear from Kareem Hunt. He'll speak to the media in Kansas City for the first time since not only signing back with the team, but, of course, since he left and was cut from the team in 2018. What Patrick Mahomes had to say there, he was asked about an example of Travis Kelce still being effective but not getting the ball.
As in, he was triple teamed and Noah Gray ended up getting a completion for 13 yards as a result.
Yeah, against the Falcons, he pointed to one pass where he ends up hitting Noah Gray, but the Falcons had three defenders follow Travis Kelce. So that's where, like, I just don't buy that, like, oh,
he's washed.
He's washed and teams don't have to worry about him. It just doesn't make sense.
No. I don't buy it at all. And I know it's three games and I don't have any statistical evidence to support the fact that it's over for him or anything else in between. But I think it would be different if Hollywood Brown on the field too, or some of these other players that they respected more. They don't fear Xavier Worthy yet. They don't fear Noah Gray yet. They're gonna start fearing, or damn well should, fear Rashee Rice. But until they make that shift that they fear him more than fear Travis Kelce, teams are mentally already fixed on Travis Kelce for years. That's going to be a hard habit to break. The other thing was the NIL thing. Very interesting. So now, so there's a lot of evidence. Apparently the collective is going to release a statement later. And look, I can't tell you exactly what happened. The UNLV quarterback is saying that Sluka was that he was promised $100,000, and a bunch of people in his camp are saying he was promised $100,000. The collective is claiming that he wasn't promised that, but also he's saying the coaching staff is who promised right. it. What? So look, there's some gray area here, but as you look at the way that this is laying out, one thing has been very true between Patrick Mahomes, Ross Tucker, who covers college football, played college football and all that thing, is the biggest problem with this is this back alley drug deal vibe of all this, where there's a problem. Patrick Mahomes just said it. There's a problem in college football where these kids are being promised this money and not being paid it. It's not on paper. It's not written in ink because they don't want to pay it. They're making empty promises to these college kids, claiming they'll pay them, and it's not getting done in a lot of cases. Yeah, that's something that has to get looked into.
That goes back to the lack of a contract, and the NCAA and everybody could have made this way simpler. And maybe this will be the situation that prompts it to actually change. And if that's what happens out of this, that ends up being a good thing for everybody in college football. But I was listening to a panel that Nick Saban was on, I don't know, a week or two ago, and he was talking about how even in Alabama, they're having issues with their collective paying up, and that they've had to change some wording to where basically the university, not on the academic side, is now agreeing to cover some of the costs that were promised. So this collective stuff is a mess. And yes, ultimately it's the collectives that are paying the name, image, and likeness out, whether it's KU, K-State, or Missouri. They all have collectives, some company they're working with. Some of it's in-house, some of it's not. They are ultimately the ones taking care of Avery Johnson for the Corvette, or pick whatever player on Missouri.
Come on, get the car right. Whatever. Corvette, that's nothing.
I don't know what the hell it is.
It's a Lambo.
Was it? Whatever, sure.
I don't think it matters, but yes.
Whatever.
It's a Lamborghini.
The lavender purple sports car. And so that is happening all across the country. But at the same time, if I go on a recruiting visit and I'm considering going to your school and you're saying, hey, through our collective and through name, image, and likeness, we're going to be able to get you $100,000. Yes, it's verbal. But if you're told that and you guys can't follow through, I don't care if the collective is who is actually writing the check or not. It is still on, in this case, Barry Odom, the head coach at UNLV. It's still on that university to find out how to fulfill said obligation. Yes. And if you can't, then there are consequences. And for the first time, it looks like, we don't know for sure, based on reporting, it looks like that perhaps here a player has decided, because that obligation was not fulfilled, to move on.
He doesn't owe it to you to play out the rest of the season.
That's the right that he has. And it is still, like, no matter how you view the situation, it is still wild to me, though, that whether we find out that the player is 100% accurate, whether we find out the school is 100% accurate, you are 3-0. You are top 25 team in the country. You're the favorite of a group of five for a group of five to go to the college football playoff. And yet you weren't able to come up with $100,000 to fix this issue. Yeah. And by the way, I think it was
a Corvette. It is a Corvette. I was wrong. I apologize.
According to Pete Thamel, though, according to what Pete Thamel reported, that the agreement was from an assistant coach to transfer there.
Uh-huh.
That's illegal. So he was never going to get that money in the first place.
Yeah, but Drew, let's not pretend here for a second.
You think the director of the NIL is going on the recruiting trips with the coach and he's the one actually offering the money? Come on.
No, I'm saying that you can't, as a coach, promise somebody money for transferring there. That's against NIL rules.
But Drew, I know that you're like the nicest member of the show by fact. Do you think that no one in college football is doing that? Or do you think that, like, literally everybody in college football is doing that?
I think
these kids are just choosing to transfer out of the goodness of their heart, and then maybe the check will come?
No, I think it happens, but you can't have... He was bamboozled by an assistant promising something that they hadn't even agreed to in the first place. So for him saying, hey, we'll give you this money if you transfer here, it sounds great. You can't promise that money that way.
Well, then that's
on
Barry Odom. Then, like, and you know, whoever.
Yeah, still not on the kid, though.
Correct. Furthermore, he said afterwards, the collective didn't formalize a contract. They do formalize contracts. UNLV didn't formalize a contract for $100,000. It was for the $3,000 stipend or whatever. So that from the beginning, it was a problem of an assistant coach promising something they didn't even have in writing yet.
Which means I still don't blame the kid for leaving.
Do you still have a problem with the kid standing up, if it's true that he was promised money, standing up and saying, hey, man, I still have eligibility if I transfer now before the end of the, you know, before it gets to four games? So we're going to revisit this, I'm sure, but we want to go back out to Arrowhead. Kareem Hunt speaking to the media.
Your former teammates just have this kind of magical run.
Oh, it was great. You know, I was a part of it, you know, in the beginning, and, you know, I was just so happy and thrilled for them. I wanted them to win all along, you know, and they deserve it. You know, they got great coaches, great players, and everybody, you know, comes and does their job.
What was it like for you not being a part of that as they were winning Super Bowls?
Well, it was hard, but, you know, I had to just, you know, think about, you know, the good positive things. I was so, you know, excited for, you know, Coach Reed to win multiple Super Bowls. You know, I wanted to be, you know, the guy to help him do that too. So I still got a lot of close friends on this team, and, you know, I couldn't be more excited for them to, you know, see them achieve their goals.
The Indian pattern.
You talked about he went to Patrick's wedding, and he referenced it, and the coach referenced the conversation he had with you at that wedding. Can you talk about that day, and do you have any idea that it was going to be so big?
I mean, it was just great. You know, Pat and I came in together. We've been real tight since we, you know, entered the NFL. And, you know, it was one of those great weddings. It was, like, perfect. And, you know, getting to see all those guys and, you know, be around them, hang out, and enjoy it. Honestly, I thought it was going to be, you know, I was with Cleveland at the time still, but, you know, if they had a chance, they would try to get me back and stuff like that. So it was kind of, it made me feel good. I just wanted to make sure I just keep doing the right thing and, you know, taking care of my family and going out there and showing up on tape.
Pat and Andy are very day by day, you know, put in the work today. But, yeah. You know, thinking long term, what would a championship, a ring mean in the course of this journey to kind of sort of come full circle in that sense?
I mean, that's been my goal. I feel like any player who steps on the football field wants to, you know, get a championship ring. And, you know, it'll be, you know, a dream come true for me ever since I was a little kid. And, you know, I couldn't be more excited to, you know, help these guys defend that title. And, you know, come back around here and see all these familiar faces and, you know, family here.
Great. What was it like emotionally for you to come back here with the feeling of a second chance to be part of this?
You said what was it like?
Yeah, emotionally to feel like you're coming back with a second chance to be part of it all.
I mean, it was a lot, honestly. It was, you know, a lot of emotions. I was very excited, you know, a little nervous and stuff like that. So I said, these guys know me. I just got to go and be myself, man.
What were kind of the first thoughts that entered your mind as you walked in the building?
What was my first thought? I mean, honestly, my first thought is the building smelled the same. Like, I mean, it looks the same. And it was just, you know, brought back so many memories. And I couldn't be more excited, you know, to go play for a head coach like Coach Reed.
Can you take us through the process of, you know, figuring out that there was interest there and just winding up here?
Well, I'm not really sure. It just worked out at the end of the day. Got the call, we got on the phone and talked about it and was on a flight.
Go ahead, Craig.
Can you tell us about your conversation with Coach Reed when you got here, what that was like, and what sort of things he tried to get across and wanted to express to him?
Oh, our conversation was good. We just caught up, you know, he asked about my family, how everything was going. I asked him about his family and stuff like that. We just, you know, we just left off. He knows what type of person I am, and he just said, man, you just do what you've been doing, keep your nose clean, and, you know, stay focused, and everything's going to, you know, come full circle for you.
We're going to go around the room. Steve, go ahead.
Coach, we talked about you coming off hernia surgery last year,
yeah.
Fighting back through that. How healthy are you now, and what can you, you know, bring to this offense?
Well, honestly, I fought through that all last year, you know, and I actually got that done this offseason, and I feel great, you know. So I'm glad that I was able to get healthy and, you know.
All right, we'll go right back out to Kareem Hunt in just a second. You're listening to Kareem Hunt. Right here on your home for the Chiefs, 96.5 The Fan. You could tell already how excited he is to be back.
He sounds so happy to be here
in Kansas City. All right, let's go back out there.
If you are able to play for the rest of the season, just what do you hope to sort of prove to yourself more than anyone else?
Well, you know, it's still hard to envision. I guess once that day come, it's gonna feel real because, you know, it's been a long time coming. I can't wait to put on the red again and, you know, go out there with, you know, these guys and put it all on the line for them. And I envision going out there and, you know, whatever I'm asked to do, just do it at the highest level and, you know, help find a way to, you know, keep this winning going on around here.
Adam. Kareem, are you the same player you were when you were here the last time around? Are you capable of still doing the same things you did for the Chiefs back then?
Yeah, I believe I'm very capable of that still. And I'm excited to go, you know, help shock the world and show them I still got it.
We'll go last couple, Nick and then Todd. Go ahead, Nick.
Kareem, from 2018 when you were here until now, kind of what differences do you see in this team and kind of the culture overall?
I see a lot of, you know, talent around here, and they had a bunch of talent ever since I was here. And I just seen, you know, the way, you know, Pat has grown and matured and, you know, became the leader of this team. Because when my rookie year, I played with Alex, and he was like that. So I feel like just seeing the player he turned in to be, and I couldn't be more happier.
Back in 18, it seemed to be a decision made at ownership level. Have you not been on the team anymore? Have you take me back to that time, and then have you had conversations with ownership to come back here, and what were those like maybe?
I mean, yeah, through that time, I was just, you know, I would say I was going through a lot, so I really just had to focus on myself at that time, and you know, those guys wanted the best for me and cared for me, and, you know, I hate the situation that it came down to, but honestly, I feel like it made me stronger, a stronger person, you know, and, you know, taught me a lot about myself. So I was able to, you know, reflect and, you know, learn from it and just bounce back. And then ownership, I'll hopefully get to talk to him soon. You know, I just don't like I don't really know what to say about that.
Matt?
Kareem, I'm sure the last couple of weeks have been a bit of a whirlwind. How did being on the scout team last week just help you get into the swing of things and prepare you for this week?
You know, it just felt good being out there running the football again and playing football. And honestly, that's what you need to do to get, you know, football ready, game ready, is go out there and practice and, you know, make those sudden cuts and finish your runs and stuff like that. So I feel like it did a good job of preparing me, and I can't wait to keep stacking days.
Okay, thanks, Kareem.
Yeah, thank you.
All right, so that was Kareem Hunt. Very excited to be back in Kansas City. He said he admitted, like, he never thought he'd rejoin. I did not think I'd end up back here after leaving the Chiefs in 2018, getting cut from the Chiefs, and who could blame him? I mean, that's why we were surprised when he got brought back as well. I mean, if he's surprised, it's not crazy. Some of you were like, why are you guys surprised he's coming back? And the player himself is surprised that he's back in Kansas City. We all know the circumstances and everything.
I have to imagine when he got cut from the team the first time, there's no way he thought he was coming back.
Yeah, but he definitely I will say he sounds very, very appreciative to be back in this spot, understands the Super Bowls that have been won since he's been gone, and now he knows he's paired back up with Andy Reid to win, quote, multiple Super Bowls. Or he was excited for Coach Reid to win multiple Super Bowls in hopes, obviously, that he can keep the momentum going.
Help him do that for the same thing. I know we'll react more to Kareem Hunt here in just a little bit because we've got Vern coming up. But yeah, I mean, the thing that stands out the most is that he sounded genuinely happy about being back in Kansas City and putting the red back on. Like, I mean, it seemed like this is something that he had maybe dreamt about at some point after getting cut by Kansas City, and now we'll get to do it on Sunday.
All right, up next, let's get back to the Royals. They finally break that losing streak yesterday. They're sitting a lot better than they were 24 hours ago. Let's talk to Vern about that and how he sees the next five games going next here on 96.5 The Fan.